Employer, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Yes, some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
Well, there is Ketanji Brown Jackson, who apparently went to an NEA-led school district and learned that the government is there to protect the citizens from the Constitution rather than the Constitution protecting the government, the citizens from the government. And I have a feeling that my guest this segment, Adriana Kuhn, who is running for Francis Howell School District Board, an open seat there, might have a different feeling. Maybe Ketanji could have, you know, done a non-NEA-led school. Maybe she'd have learned different. How you doing, Adriana? Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Dr. Tobler. Thank you for having me on.
I played that clip because we're to a point now where I think the union-led educational establishment that has gained increased footing across the land has convinced people that the government is there and they're there to help rather than the government is only there to usually get in the way of things. And that's one of the I think historical and civic education elements that is being lost with the new CRT, DEI, all of the crazy woke stuff that's going on in our school districts. Is that one of the things that you are running on and against in the Francis Howell race?
Well, the NEA has taken a lot of control over our elections for the school board and influence in the school boards. A lot of teachers I'm talking with say that they can't even speak up in the school system because they are afraid of the repercussions of what will happen with the NEA. And just to be completely honest, if we say the quiet part out loud, the NEA is a branch of the Democratic Party. So my opponents are saying that they don't have politics in this election, and that's just simply not true because the NEA works on behalf of the Democratic Party and works in lockstep with them, and they are bringing politics into our schools and a lot of agendas. Like, here's one concerning health that really concerns me. They have a resolution. The NEA has a resolution, which is an action plan, so they want it to happen, and it says all students should have access to gender-affirming healthcare, which means instead of letting parents decide the healthcare for their children, they want to make sure every single student who wants gender-affirming healthcare, which I think is harmful to our kids, without parental consent, they want all students to have that. So yes, the NEA has taken over a lot of control in our schools, and it's in the background, and so people don't see it on the surface. But what we're fighting against and what we are running against is actually the NEA, because the NEA is funding our opponents, and they've been funding the school board elections and controlling that for many decades, but right now it's coming to surface.
I want you to either affirm or refute what I think is the truth. You alluded to it a little bit, but I think that a lot of teachers who know the proper way to teach, the proper way to inspire the curiosity for lifelong learning and academic excellence, feel intimidated to speak out. And there's a lot of silent suffering going on among the teacher ranks, while your opponents and people like them and supporters will say that you guys don't care about the teachers. You're just trying to, and I think we should separate rank and file sentiments versus NEA leadership. You want to expand on that?
Yes. So our local NEA, they don't have to report how many people exactly are part of the association. But if you look at tax returns and other evidence, it looks like there's only about 30%, possibly more, but it could be as low as 30% of teachers are part of the NEA. every single teacher I've been speaking with isn't part of the NEA because they just, it's really expensive, and they can get, the reason teachers are part of the NEA is because of lawsuits. They get protection legally, and they get representation if anything happens at the school. So those are the two main reasons that people are part of the NEA. But the ones who aren't part of the NEA, they've been telling me and my running mate, Sam Young, they've been telling us they can't even talk about anything. They don't get appointed to committees. They don't have any say about what's going on in the school. They just have to be quiet and go about their jobs. And that is not a healthy working environment for our teachers. We should be respecting our teachers. I do respect our teachers. I think they are the most valuable assets we have in our schools. And I think we're not fully utilizing them. So when I get on the board, I want to bring them into the fold. I'm already trying to set up meetings with teachers across all the schools in Francis Howell, set up personal meetings where they can just sit down and vent. When I sit down with these teachers, they talk for 2 or 3 hours straight, and I just listen because they're not being heard in our schools, and they have so much valuable insight to provide to us that can make our schools top tier.
We're talking with Adriana Kuhn, who's running for one of the open seats in the Francis Howell School District, along with Sam Young. You're a mom, right? And you have a marketing experience, and Sam is a veteran, as I understand it, right?
Yes, and I have a psychology degree, a bachelor's in psychology, and then I used to be a stockbroker, so I have a background in finance, and right now I have a small business that is a marketing company. And yes, Sam That's was great. A submariner for 20 years on submarines, and now he is retired from that position, and he has a secondary career as an engineer, which is what he did.
Well, let's do Periscope up on an issue recently that our friend Tony Messenger, you know, I have to keep in touch with the other side, you know, Adrian, I have to keep in touch with the other side. Apparently reported that in the past few months, there were some real divisive moves there, where the board actually rescinded an anti-racism resolution, which sounds good to me. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. And then tried to cancel black literature classes and black history classes. But then the kids walked out and they brought attention to the issue. And I guess things, what, have been reinstated now? Let me go back to that. In my day, Adriana, if I would have walked out with a bunch of other kids, we would have faced some serious consequences, both at school and, by the way, at home. Since when is the tail wagging the dog at the Francis Howell School District?
Well, okay, I read that article that came out from Tony, and here's the thing. That is filled with misconceptions, because first off, they keep saying that the board removed the Black History and Black Literature courses. That did not happen. The board removed the social justice teaching standards from the Southern Poverty Law Center for those courses. The administration was always the governing party to decide if we were going to have that on for enrollment in January. And here's the thing. When those classes were first built in 2021, they put those on enrollment for January of 2021, and the curriculum and standards did not get approved until June of 2021. So 6 months later. And here, this was December of 23, just this last December, when they removed those standards and curriculum and said, you have to rebuild these by June. So they had the exact same amount of time, and 75% of the coursework still could be used. So first off, people are confusing the role of the board, the role of the administration, and how they function in our school systems, because the board removed the standards and curriculum that were written by the Southern Poverty Law Center. The district, the administration, one person in the administration said in that board meeting, well, we're not going to put it on for enrollment then. And after there was such backlash, the administration decided to put it on for enrollment, which they always should have, because six months was a sufficient amount of time. So when the story is built on misconceptions, it's hard for people to understand the truth. So to start off, I don't think it was the walkout that caused the administration to decide to keep it open for enrollment. Many board members stated they did not want to have a gap in learning for this. I don't want a gap in learning for this. And I specifically said at that forum that Tony Messenger was covering that I was glad the administration kept it open for enrollment. And in that article, it seems like I said something else, something I didn't say. So,
okay. Well, I wanted to clear that up and give you a chance to clear that up. But I guess my bigger point is, if you were on the board, would you endorse a policy that would, I mean, did those students show, whether they were on, quote, your side of the argument or not, it seems inappropriate to me that students, young skulls full of mush, whose wiring isn't connected, whose neurons are still being pruned, that's the purpose of schools, that suddenly they can walk out of class. Did those students face any kind of consequences for that? That to me is what bothers me. We have the inmates running the jail.
I can see how that bothers some people. For me, I'm okay with the students being able to protest. I know other people might not be okay with that and have a different view on it, but that I feel like they should be able to, unless it is a regular thing that causes a real disruption in learning. I don't know. I would have to see what a policy like that would look like. But truthfully, I kind of lean on the side of uncensorship and freedom of thought and speech. And in that, letting our kids express themselves, I'm okay with that.
Well, good. Let me ask you another policy question. When I was on a school board in a small district up in Northeast Missouri back in the teens, late 2000 and into the early teens, we kept hearing about, academic education, professional development class, about kids don't have to do homework. We want to do it right in school rather than letting them struggle afterwards. And I mean, some kind of nonsense. No, it's the struggle of trying to do it on your own and the discipline that comes with homework. That is, that builds resilience and grit and sends the message that academics, not cell phone time, is what is important. Are you in favor of homework being done in school or homework being done at home?
I think we need more schoolwork. We need more homework. Our academics are falling and teachers, they're struggling because I think they're not getting the support they need from the district. So I think we need homework. Our kids need to be doing homework. I came home, I did homework all the time. And when our academic numbers are falling, which they are, we thought, sorry if I go a little off course, but we thought in 2021, our academic levels were going to be the lowest because of COVID. So all of our scores and ratings were going to be the lowest they would be ever because of COVID. That's the first year they had testing after COVID in the spring of 21. Actually, in the spring of 22, our scores decreased 5%. In the spring of 23, another 5% on certain things in our schools, like math and reading levels. So I feel like we're caving into the kids. They're in our personal lives, in the family role, and in our schools. I feel like everybody's overwhelmed in our society. It's very heavy. There's so much going on. And in our schools, kids are on their cell phones. They're not paying attention in class. They're disruptive. There's no consequences for their actions when they are disruptive. They go, even at high school level, they go to the principal and they come back with a basket of fries. I don't know why. It's like they're going to get in trouble and they come back with rewards. And yes, I think we need more schoolwork. We need higher academic standards because our kids need to be pushed. We need, I don't know if you know about this, the challenge classes that were removed for the sake of equity. Do you remember?
No.
Okay. in 2021, our superintendent, which now we have a different superintendent.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this. But go ahead. And for those who haven't heard about it, go ahead quickly and tell about that.
So, yes, he removed our advanced classes at middle school level, multiple different classes, for the sake of equity. So, and that was a multi-year plan to go ahead and remove even more advanced classes at all of middle school grades, for the sake of equity. But the community spoke out. I went to board meetings. I talked out against it. We should not be removing advanced classes for the sake of equity. And that's part of keeping our academic standards high. We need high level classes. We need Black history and Black literature. I want as much options for education as possible. I just don't want them taught from that social justice standard.
Well, everyone, if everyone needs to be a winner, then you just, it's a race to mediocrity, right? Because there are people that excel in certain areas and there's people that excel in other areas. And that's what makes life rich. You know, you try to excel and you find your sweet spot, and teachers and guidance counselors help you do that. But if you're lost and mired in victimhood and who's the oppressor and who's the oppressed, that doesn't ever work out well at any level.
And I'll tell you one thing about somebody I know who is taking or has taken that Black history and Black literature course. And they say, no, it didn't have anything in it. Well, they define terms in this course. And one term, when defining racism, it's only majority. If you are a majority race, and you can be racist to a minority. They say any minority race cannot be racist. So no matter what minority you are. And that just doesn't make any sense. So some of these things that they are defining as terms in the old classes, I just feel like that's hurtful, harmful. Yeah, labels people as oppressors or oppressed. And we need to be teaching our children facts. We need to be teaching them the actual history of what happened. And then they can determine for themselves what they think about those events.
Great. Hey, Adriana, where do we learn more about you folks that are in the district, or folks that aren't in the district and would just like to learn more about you and support you?
Yes. So I have a website, voteadrianacoon.com, and you can find my issues directly stated. I'm very clear about that on my website. And then you can find me on Facebook at Adriana Coon for Francis Howell School Board. Randy, I appreciate you having me on so much. It's just, I appreciate all you do to bring awareness to all of these issues.
Well, thank you very much. And look, I think that these days with the machine against you, it's like a David versus Goliath. But I think your David is going to prevail from everything I've heard. Thanks so much and all the best to you in the election coming up April 2nd.
All right. Thank you. Great.
All right. Bye. There she is, Adriana Coon. It's Adriana Kuhn. Adriana Coon. When we come back, I have a hero of the week, and it speaks to the whole dysfunction that we have in our politics. And I think there's a guy that has been prominent that spoke truth to power this week. And it just, I don't know why, but it just really got me jazzed up. I think it'll get you jazzed up too. Stay tuned for that when we come back on the Tobler Show. Virginia Cruda at 7:45. And then we talk about gig workers under assault and EBs rising in the Biden administration in the 8 o'clock hour. So stay tuned for more.
If we say the quiet part out loud, the NEA is a branch of the Democratic Party. And the NEA has a resolution, which is an action plan, so they want it to happen. And it says all students should have access to gender-affirming health care.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL.
Hey, it looks like you like to get up early, so Monday through Friday, listen to me from 5:30 to 9, Mike Ferguson here, and you are listening to the Randy Tobler Show right here on News Talk STL.
And a great show is the great Mike Ferguson Show. Man, I sometimes the feed, the News Talk STL website, if I'm on my desktop, or the app get me distracted. So sometimes I have to just be disciplined and turn it off and get a little work done. But I try to listen to it all day long. My wife reminds me, Randy, you have work to do, you know, sometimes. So I have to be careful because it's compelling stuff, whether it's Mike or Katie and Tony and, you know, Tim and Chris. And then, of course, in the evenings, Rob Carter, and we've got on the weekends, all the great shows. Hey, listen, there's times when I get inspired when we, the people, speak out and we speak truth to power. And that happened this week with Tony Bobulinski and his testimony in the Oversight Committee, James Comer. Now, picture this. Comer is there presiding over the committee. Jamie Raskin, it's hard for me to believe in the wake of Kate, you know, especially just as I think about the whole week in context. Jamie Raskin just got over cancer. I think it was prostate cancer. The guy is an existential threat to his health. And to show you how much these people are in love with their power and their elitism, it just, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's fine. If he wants to do it, it's his life to live. But they continue to be arrogant. They continue to be elitist and condescending. Anyway, Bobulinski, Hunter Biden's former business partner, who really blew the lid open, pulled the pin on the grenade that really got the whole Biden family crime syndicate thing launched. He's testifying in front of this committee. These people, the committee members, are up there on their perch, their high dais, because they're better than us, you know. Now, if it's that they need to see us, no, it should be the other way around. They serve us. We should be up on the podium when we're testifying. They should be on the floor. That's what I would do. If I was running for Congress, I'd say, you know what? The next time there's a witness, I want the witness up on the dais because they're the people. They're the common people. They're the whatever. And I'm going to sit down on the floor because I serve the people. But that's just me. Okay, so we've got this setting going on. Bobulinski, who can't get people in places like the DOJ and the FBI and the CIA to listen to him, he's testifying. And, of course, AOC is part of this committee, too. And here's where he dresses down arrogant AOC. Listen.
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a business deal.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir?
Specifically. You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
statutes.
Excuse
me, sir. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is the
category of crimes that you're then charged?
You have charges.
A long hundred.
You have charges. Sir, please
the name the exact statute under RICO.
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over
18 all right, sir. I reclaim my
lawyers that went to law school.
Time.
Wow. I mean, it was just, there's something. Candace Owens did it a couple years ago when she just basically shushed up some of these condescending, arrogant representatives who aren't there to find the truth. They don't care about the truth. They care about the next election. They care about being, you know, permanent politicians. They're not citizen states, women and men. They're professional politicians. And they and their family benefit way beyond the salary they're making. It's not just the Biden crime syndicate. It's every family member of every. And I don't. That's fine. Networking is networking. That's great. But you know, my advice to AOC, you know, you're an embarrassment. What you should do. I hear that she made a great mocha latte frappuccino with goat milk. I heard she was great at that when she was the barista, or when she's a bartender. Did she make a dirty martinis? I don't know. Whatever. She's an embarrassment to bartenders and baristas, by the way. I mean, because she better learn about RICO. RICO is a collection of several individual crimes under an umbrella. And that's what he was trying to explain. And she didn't get it. She didn't do her homework. She doesn't understand. And so he called her out. And then, of course, when the heat got too hot, she's like, I reclaim my time. I reclaim my time. That's their method. That's their MO. When they don't hear what they want to hear from the witness, but by that time, they've already gotten enough of their soundbite and video clip in so that that'll be on their next election commercial. That's what that is. Then they shut the witness up. And for you men out there, you know what I'm talking about. And you gals, I know whether you don't do it, I know that gals are very good at this. Jerome, you know what I mean. You ever seen, women are really good at this. And this is not a sexist thing, but I've only seen women do this. You know, when the head goes back and forth from shoulder to shoulder, oh, are you telling me that, you know, the attitude. My daughters get a kick out of that when they see other women doing that. It's like, oh, yeah, you too. So she went into that thing. AOC did the head back and forth, you know, from shoulder to shoulder. It was great. And giving it all the attitude she could. Excuse me, sir. You know, I thought it was beautiful. And it just dishonored her. She just embarrassed herself. But wait, there's more. Next, he takes on Jamie Raskin and Dan Goldman, the congressmen who continue to spin the narrative and obstruct the truth. Here's a little bit of that, the first clip. This is number 3.
The same people preaching this mantra know better. They continue to lie directly to the American people without hesitation and remorse. Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name.
Mr. Chairman.
The cold hard facts.
Mr. Chairman.
In an attempt to save his powerfully connected client and his father. I challenge Mr. Lowell to make those claims on national television so he can be held accountable for his lies.
Wow. Yes. Absolutely. Applause, applause, applause. You know, if you're a little person who has to pay their taxes here in just a couple weeks, and by March 1st, if you hadn't declared the property, if you hadn't reported the personal property that you own to the government so that they can then tax you for owning property. Remember that? That just passed. I mean, come on. We abide by the law. We obey the law. We abide by the law. If we get caught with 0.05 over the legal limit, they take our license from us. But the people that sit up at the high dais, they can get away with highway robbery. They can take our taxes, confiscate our money, plunder our hard-earned cash, and then redistribute it to illegals in the form of Obama phones and debit cards and housing. Because they crossed illegally. Felons. That's a felony to cross the border. And when someone like this speaks truth to power, it just is so powerful. It's so great. And then it gets better because Raskin was looking at this guy, at Bob Alinsky, with contempt. He just couldn't take it anymore that he was being called out. It was just beautiful. What happened to the First Amendment, Mr. Raskin? Have you not heard of that? Oh, if we don't testify and speak to your narrative, then you just cut us off. Mr. Chairman. Okay, then it gets better. Listen to Bob Alinsky. He just turned it back on him. Listen.
Prior to my successful business career, I was an officer in the United States Navy. At Navy's elite Naval Nuclear Power Training Command, I later served as the command's chief technology officer.
Proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the...
Supposed to say it's my time, Mr. Raskin?
Yeah.
But please, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. So he looks up because Raskin is still rattling and saber rattling and raising Cain and interrupting his testimony. And he looks up at him, and boy, I mean, it was an incredulous look. Like, who are you? You wipe your butt like me, don't you? You spray stuff under your arms so they don't smell, don't you? Who are you, Jamie Raskin? High and mighty. That was the kind of look. He just looks up because he's being interrupted. And then he says, is it time for me to reclaim my time, Mr. Raskin? That was beautiful. I'm sorry, Tony Bobulinski is my winner of the week, hands down, because he spoke the way we would like to speak to condescending, arrogant politicians who tell us one thing, do another, plunder our hard-earned labor so that they can redistribute wealth and pander to various special interest groups and continue their elite imperial dynasty. That's what they do. And they don't allow us to speak when it's our opportunity to speak. They condescend. They cut us off. They obstruct us. And I thought it was a brilliant thing. Jerome, didn't that just warm your heart? It was just good to see. It was good to see a common person speak back to power.
Absolutely. I feel like watching this, it was a bit painful to watch how they're literally asking him to answer questions and they won't even give him the decency to do so.
That's right.
And well, looking at him that last time, I was trying so hard not to crack up because he looks, it's that look of bewilderment where it's like, are you kidding me right now? Is this some kind of joke? Is this Kangaroo Court? What's going on here? And I think that's how we all feel when we watch these show trials go on. They want you, and like you said, it's soundbite chasing. It's clip chasing. So they can make themselves look good. But when it comes to the real substance, the real meat of it, they don't care. They don't want to hear the response. They don't want us saying anything that's going to make them look bad and expose what they're doing. And I applaud him. I truly feel bad that he had to go through this, but I applaud him for it.
Yeah, I do too. And he said later on, he said, look, I've begged them to look at the text on my BlackBerry. I thought it's cute that he has a BlackBerry. Who has a BlackBerry anymore? I mean, I don't know, but that's okay. It tells you that the guy is a little different. He's a principled guy. Oh, and then you saw where his lawyer sent a retraction demand, basically a threat for a defamation suit, to Fox News because Jessica Tarloff, the day after or the evening of on the 5, and we won't play it, but she said basically that Trump's PAC, the super PAC, had paid the law firm to defend Tony Bobulinski through all these. He's had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of his own money. Well, it turns out that, yeah, they've done work apparently for other RNC causes, but there was no billing apparently at all in the defense of for the money that they received from the PAC was not for billing pursuant to the defense of Tony Bobulinski. He has defended himself with hundreds of thousands of dollars. And ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you, There are people listening to me out there now. You know what I'm talking about. I've been there too. Who have to spend money out of our own pockets to defend ourselves against ridiculous, absurd, unfounded accusations. And how many of you can't do that because you don't have any? I'm blessed. I had some means to do that. And I'm telling you, how many people can't defend themselves against power? Against people that have power and wield it irresponsibly and recklessly. This country is developing and is now functioning under one of the most corrupt, and it happens at the local, state, and federal level, corrupt justice systems ever. We are turning into a third world banana country. That's what we are. And it's happening because legislators are setting that example. If you're powerful, if you're well-funded, if you're well-connected, you can get away with murder. If you're Jerome or Randy, don't dare drive 7 miles over the speed limit. You're going to get points on your license, and the insurance company knows about it. Since when is that the government colludes with the insurance company? That's bothered me for decades. So I get a speeding ticket. I haven't, by the way, gotten that penalty. But you get a speeding ticket on the road, and the government reports it to your insurance company? Hello, what happened to improper search and seizure? What happened to privacy? What happened to, you know, that's between you and the government. Punish me, government, that's okay. I'll pay my penalty. But you report to my insurance company? Hello? Don't even get me started about the so-called privacy of your medical records. That's a joke. Oh, well, I'm going to wrap it up. Jerome says I'm getting carried away here. We're going to toss it to Virginia Cruda here in just a few minutes and talk about the crazy things going on, including the absurd $1.2 trillion non-border security bill that just passed along with the spending. We'll be back with more on the Tobler Show while we regroup here in just a minute.
Tobler, truth warrior, woke destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter.
Welcome back to the program. Always fun when we touch base with Virginia Cruda. And Virginia, welcome in. I don't know if you were listening last segment, but we played the sparring between AOC condescending to Tony Bobulinski. And then you wrote about how she and Ted Cruz got over that. Tell us about it.
well, she obviously you just played it, so your audience is aware of what happened. But Ted Cruz kind of quoted her comments, and he's like, but RICO is a crime. Now, keep in mind, Ted Cruz is a constitutional lawyer. I mean, I don't know if I'd pick a legal fight with him, but I guess AOC is different because she went ahead and did it. She's like, no. Now, what got to me was when she was questioning him and she was lecturing him, like, it's not a crime. It is a category. And I'm like, you know what? Nobody thinks that that's cute. Nobody thinks that that's cute.
No.
You look like you're trying to lecture this witness, and he's clearly got the evidence and you don't. And when you're saying, okay, so like if I say theft is a crime, well, what did you steal? If you don't tell me what you steal, you can't be charged with a crime. Well, okay. And yeah, I get it. It makes a difference if you stole like somebody's silverware or you stole a car. Obviously, that makes a difference as far as the penalties. And that's RICO charges increase the penalties for some lesser crime. And so, which is obviously why they tried to slap Donald Trump with that, because the way they can hit him harder than if they didn't hit him with RICO. So is she technically correct? Is it a category of crime? Maybe. But it's also a crime, because so it's just one of those things that, like, even if she is right, the people on her side still want her to stop talking because it just looks bad.
Yeah, well, and I was having fun with it because I've seen people do it, and I it seems to me as though sometimes girls do it on TikTok. You see it, they get the attitude thing going with the head shifting back and forth. She even got into that a little bit. I just thought it was hilarious. And it was so embarrassing for her, you know, the way she tried to smack him down. And I mean, you know, Saul Weisman, who's a former chief of the financial fraud unit at the U.S. Attorney's Office, said, quote, if you're you have this on your post on the Daily Wire, if you're going to bully a witness, at least you shouldn't embarrass yourself by getting the law wrong. I mean, it was just so obviously wrong. It's crazy.
And it's just the number, and they're calling these stunts, and I'm watching what's going on right now in the Republican Party, and I just want to head desk is that it's the only word that comes to mind, because we've got all this stuff going on and we're looking at an election that could be more chaotic than 2020 was, more chaotic than 2000 was, if you want to think back a little bit, because we're in a situation where we have an active spoiler who could send the election to Congress. And what I mean by that is, so like we've got RFK Jr., right? Well, what happens? The likelihood is he can't get 270 electoral votes, right? RFK can't win outright. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Okay, but here's what he can do. If he gets on enough ballots, and I mean, I'm in Georgia right now, and I have seen Kennedy bumper stickers here. There are places, swing states, where Kennedy has pull. Now, he only has to win a couple to prevent both Biden and Trump from getting to 270 either. And you know what happens if nobody gets to 270?
Yes.
The election goes to Congress, and each state gets one vote in the House to choose the president. And then the Senate votes to choose the vice president. Now, right now, the Democrats control the Senate, and they will control the Senate in November, unless something major changes. Now, they won't control it by much, but they will be able to choose the vice president. We could end up in a situation where we have a Republican president and a Democrat vice president. That's a possibility. Or if Marjorie Taylor Greene continues to threaten to remove Johnson as House Speaker, and Republicans keep resigning in the fashion that they are without finishing their terms, we could end up with a Speaker Hakeem Jeffries and a Democrat majority in the House, too, when all this goes down.
Right.
So there is way too much in play here for us to be fiddling with the idea of getting rid of the current House Speaker. Or, I mean, the Republicans who are resigning now, why? What is it that's so dire that you can't finish your term that ends in like 9 months?
It's a good point. Laura Ingraham went after Gallagher and Buck. Yeah, Gallagher and Buck.
I haven't heard a compelling reason for that.
No,
and the only reason it seems to be is to set us up so that Republicans have a slimmer or no majority when the election is decided. And that is dangerous ground.
Well, and what's with Ronna McDaniel signing on to MSNBC? Hello?
Oh, that's going to be interesting.
I mean, I don't get it. And then we've got the spending bill where we're spending. And again, what can you do when you don't have a strong majority at all and you got eight or nine rogues?
Right. And that's the thing that, you know, people are like, well, Mike Johnson failed us. What did you expect him to do?
I know.
He's got control of one half of one third of Congress. And even if he does get you what you want, the Senate and Biden will smack it down. So it's not going to go anywhere.
Nope.
He's doing what he can with what he has, and you keep taking people away from it.
I know.
What did you think he was going to do?
There's no more MAGA, and conservative first principles guy that I know than Mike Johnson. And it's imploding as we watch it in slow motion here. Hey, we got to run, Virginia. Thanks for your analysis. Love it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Have fun in Georgia. Georgia, or Fannie Willis. All right, we'll head across. And then when we come back, if you're a 1099 worker, stay tuned. You won't want to miss it.